Welcome to In Context, WPKN's live public affairs call-in show. This is Ken McDermott Rowe, and I'm here with my fellow host, Gus Cantavero.
Hello, good evening.
What would you do if you or a family member is diagnosed with cancer? While many undergo chemotherapy and radiation, there are alternative cancer treatments. And we're going to discuss them tonight with Tanya Harder Pierce, author of Outsmart Your Cancer, Alternative Non-Toxic Treatments for Cancer. Her website is outsmartyourcancer.com. And in a few minutes, we'll announce the call-in number so that you can join the conversation. Tanya, thanks very much for joining Gus and me on In Context.
Well, hello. Thank you for having me on your show. It's a pleasure.
What are the chances that a person will be struck with cancer sometime in his or her life?
Well, the common statistics that is generally quoted is that one in every two men and one in every three women will be diagnosed with cancer at some point in their life.
So we're talking roughly a third of the people can expect it sometime.
Yeah, something like 40%. Now, I do have to say that those statistics are, I believe it's the American Cancer Society that does put those out. However, it's not really clear if they're only referring to life-threatening cancers, because they do lump in some non-life-threatening cancers in their statistics usually. For instance, some of the in situ breast cancers like DCIS, or possibly some skin cancers. So they're not real clear, actually, on whether they refer to only life-threatening cancers or not.
One of the points you make in your book is that the industry does tend to fudge their statistics. There's a gentleman you cite named Ralph Moss who wrote The Cancer Industry about cancer statistics. Can you
using the word
that?
Fudge is putting it kindly.
Yes, that's correct. The conventional cancer industry has fudged and manipulated their statistics for decades now to make it look like they're treating cancer and having recoveries at a better rate than they really are. And It's really quite shocking. When I first got into researching cancer treatments back in 2001, one of the first things that I discovered was that the cancer industry, or basically conventional medicine and conventional mainstream medical treatments for cancer, are actually so bad at curing cancer that the medical industry for cancer treatment did something that no other aspect of the medical industry has ever done, as far as I know. And what they did was they redefined the word cure. And this is just one of the fudging tactics they've used, but it's one of the biggest ones. And by what they did was they decided that cure doesn't mean what we normally think it means. They decided to redefine it and make it mean alive 5 years after diagnosis. And so what that means is that when a cancer patient goes in for treatment in the conventional medical world, even if they're battling cancer the entire 5 years after they're diagnosed and they die 2 months after the five-year point full of cancer, they were never cancer-free, that patient will actually be listed on the books as cured. And that's one of the ways that they make their cure rate statistics look better than they really are.
And that's clearly fraudulent to do something like that. I mean,
yes.
You know, and if you applied that logic to anything else, you know, a house still standing 5 years after it was gutted by fire does not mean that it's rebuilt. You know,
exactly.
It's completely ridiculous to say something like that. And it's very misleading. I mean, I was watching a show just the other night, and I think it was John Stossel, and he pulled up a quote, a chart from the American Cancer Association, and it said that the rates of cancer were going down in the last 5 years. I'm thinking, that's ridiculous. How could he possibly come up with a statistic like that? And then he was asked by the guest, where'd you get that chart from? He said, oh, I think it was the American Cancer Association. Like, okay, that pretty much answers the question right there.
Well, generally speaking, we're talking about chemotherapy and radiation when we're talking about conventional methods. How do the alternative cancer remedies that you discuss in your book differ from chemo and radiation?
That's a good question. Basically, the common conventional treatments are chemotherapy, radiation, surgery, and in some cases, hormone-blocking drugs. Now, surgery actually has the best cure rate in conventional treatment, but only for a very few small number of cases, because you really have to catch the cancer early, and normally you have to be able to take out an entire organ, maybe one that you can do without, like the thyroid gland or the prostate or the uterus or something, and if you catch it early enough, surgery may be curative. But when it comes to chemotherapy and radiation, for instance, those are very toxic treatments, and the toxic treatments are the ones that they use the most For instance, chemotherapy is given to about 75% of all cancer patients in the U.S. and radiation to about 60% of all cancer patients. And yet, the cure rate from those treatments is completely dismal. In fact, many researchers who are sort of third-party researchers who are more objective than the cancer industry have done epidemiological studies and different medical research studies and found that the chemotherapy, for instance, only has about a 2-3% cure rate overall. And
you mean only about 2-3% of the people who have chemo actually are cancer-free? I mean, really cancer-free afterwards?
That's sort of a general rough estimate, and it depends on your situation. There are a few types of cancers that do respond better to chemotherapy than others, and one of them is testicular cancer, which is why the bicycle rider is a poster boy for chemo. But, you know, he had a type of cancer that's one of the very few that does respond to chemo.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple of other types of cancers that do tend to respond pretty well to chemo. But most of the common cancers, the more common cancers that most of the people get, which are breast cancer, lung cancer, prostate cancer, and colon cancer, things like that, kidney cancer, most of those, you can basically figure that you're going to have virtually no chance of a cure from chemo. And in any type of cancer, if your cancer has metastasized, you pretty much have less than a 1% chance that chemo will be able to cure you. And unfortunately, 2/3 to 3/4 of all patients in the U.S. who are diagnosed with cancer have metastasized cancer as soon as they're diagnosed. So the vast majority of cancer patients have really no chance of a cure from chemo. But the oncologists don't tell you that. When it comes to radiation, there's really no studies that radiation is curative ever, to tell you the truth. It can reduce tumors for a short term, and so can chemo in many cases. But when you're talking about cure, you're talking about a long-term cure, more than 5 years, something where you can actually get rid of all signs of the disease and the disease doesn't come back. And for that kind of result, chemo and radiation almost never work. Very, very small percentage of cases do they work. Now, with my book, what happened was back in 2001, I started investigating alternative options when a family member of mine was diagnosed with cancer and wasn't given a very good prognosis. And I started looking into alternative medicine for cancer and discovered that, this is one thing that I found very interesting, if I could just digress for a moment.
Sure.
When you're watching television and you hear ads or, you know, maybe advertisements to race for the cure, run for the cure, you know, donate to the American Cancer Society to find the cure for cancer, things like that, you get this picture that nobody in the medical system really understands cancer and that it's some sort of strange disease that nobody's figured out yet. Well, that's what I thought when I first started looking into cancer treatments. But what I found was in alternative medicine, cancer is actually very well understood. And it's quite a shock, and it's one of those things that most people don't know. But in alternative medicine, there have been countless doctors, countless scientists, and wonderful medical researchers who have actually studied cancer and have found that there are very, very clear common characteristics that all cancer cells share and that you can target with alternative therapies. And the only reason I call them alternative is because they're not accepted and prescribed by mainstream medicine. But they're actually very scientific methods. They're well proven. They have a scientific basis. And they target the common characteristics of all cancer cells. And they can do it in a natural, non-toxic way so that it doesn't actually harm normal, healthy cells of the body. And so that's why I called my book Outsmart Your Cancer, because with these alternative methods that use non-toxic approaches, they actually target those common characteristics of cancer cells, whereas the conventional medicine, what the conventional arena of medical treatment does is they rely on toxic treatments primarily, on toxic drugs like chemo and toxic radiation, because those are the treatments they can make the most money on. They can patent them. The big pharmaceutical companies make a ton of money on those, and those pharmaceutical companies control our medical system.
Well, now you talk about something like 20 alternative cancer treatments in your book.
In my book, I actually present 21. There's 10 chapters that go into very great detail on some of the best ones with the longest track records. And I'm talking about alternative treatments in some cases that have been used by thousands of people.
Now, we won't have time, unfortunately, to get into most of them or all 21, certainly. But which ones do you think are the most effective?
Well, you know, I don't like to just single out a few, but I can mention some that are right up at the top, certainly.
Okay.
And this was one of the things that I was shocked at. Whenever I hear of somebody talking about wanting to race for the cure for cancer or something, the first thought I have is there are many cures for cancer. Cancer has been cured many, many times, over and over. But these are not the cures that cancer patients are hearing about, unfortunately, or being prescribed. One of the cures that I talk about in my book is a very, very affordable and easy to use non-toxic liquid called Protocell. And I give a lot of detail on the history of that, how it was developed by an American chemist who was a brilliant man. And he got to the point where he could actually cure 80% of the mice in his laboratory studies that had cancer. And he did his studies in cancer research centers. So he was doing this in a very official sort of way. But he could never get the FDA or the National Cancer Institute to approve studying it because they really didn't want to follow up on anything that they Big Pharma could not make a lot of money on. On the other hand, after 1994, when the FDA stopped controlling common supplements, this particular treatment that the chemist developed was able to come out as a dietary supplement, so actually people can order it over the phone or online and without a doctor's prescription. And I've known literally dozens and dozens of people who have cured themselves with this particular liquid approach called Protocell.
It has something to do with, as I understand your book, with the electricity level in the cell?
It takes a little more time to go into the details, but what a lot of people say is that it lowers the voltage of the cancer cells, and it does in a way, but I don't kind of refer to it as an electrical treatment because it does it in a biochemical way.
I understand.
Okay.
Right.
So what it does is...
The patient isn't getting a jolt of electricity.
No,
that's
right.
A chemical
and what
process.
It does is it literally, you just drink a small amount of it 4 or 5 times a day, and you keep taking it, and it just gradually reduces, it blocks the cancer cells' ability to produce energy for themselves.
So it ends up just burning itself out and dying.
Exactly. The
right.
cancer cells end up dying and falling apart. And this treatment has worked for, I've known people with, you know, leukemia, breast cancer, prostate cancer, pancreatic cancer, colon cancer, brain cancer, all kinds of people who have used this with great success. And another approach in my book, you know, I don't like to focus on just one because what I like to tell people and let the public know is that there are a lot of options out there.
Let me just interrupt one second.
Sure.
If listeners would like to call in to talk to Tanya Harder Pierce, we're talking about alternative non-toxic treatments for cancer. Our phone number here at WPKN is 203-336-9756. That's 203-336-9756 to join our conversation with Tanya Pierce about alternative cancer remedies.
Tanya, one of the things I really appreciated about your book was that you not only go into the backstory of many different types of remedies where they range all the way from natural teas that you can drink to things that are taken, you know, like Protocell, which is something more synthesized. You even talk about the Rife machine, which is something I have personal experience with, and other things like cesium. And so these are very modern explorations and some very old ones as well. And they are all non-toxic. None of them will harm you or kill you in a different way.
That's correct. And one of the treatments I do like to talk about a lot is the cesium one that you mentioned.
Right.
And it was developed by an American physicist who was a highly acclaimed scientist. And he worked with another doctor to try this out in clinical trials on cancer patients with great success. And I've come across, on the audio CD at the back of my book, I've got a couple of stories that are presented. One is presented by a woman who had metastasized ovarian cancer that was being controlled somewhat by chemo, but they had told her that they could never cure her. Well, she found out about this cesium, and it's a very easy approach to use. And it's just actually because you use liquid ionic cesium and liquid ionic potassium, and you just take a number of tablespoons per day of each. Well, she was able to completely get all of her metastasized ovarian cancer to go away, and she's been cancer-free for years now, even though the doctors told her there was no cure for her. Another man who presents his story on the CD in the book is a man who had advanced stomach cancer that was not responding to chemo. It was not responding to any of the treatments the doctors could provide. And finally, this man's oncologist told him he was going to have his stomach completely removed, and they would attach his intestines to his esophagus. This man was in his 40s and didn't want to do that, wasn't quite ready to lose his stomach, of course. So he found out about this cesium approach, and he used it very easily, and he's been cancer-free for many years. So it's just astonishing how many people have cured themselves with alternative approaches. But I do want to say that these are, many of them are not the common things that people think alternative medicine for cancer is. They're not just common supplements you buy at your local health food store.
Right.
Both Protocell and cesium are purchased at special places. You have to know where to get them. You have to learn how to use them effectively.
See, one of the things that you make a point of in your book is the disbelief factor.
That's right.
And, you know, I would just like to throw out there, if people are listening and saying, well, you know, these are probably quacks, that's why these things aren't approved yet. You know, you go into how not only the numbers are fudged, but that the rates of cancer are drastically increasing. I mean, you have a quote of breast cancer in the 1960s with 1 in 20 women, and today it's 1 in 8 women.
Mm-hmm.
Prostate cancer has risen from 85,000 cases in 1985 to 317,000 cases in 1995. And your book is not just about alternative cancer treatments, but it's also about how to stay cancer-free, you know, because you talk about food supplement or food additives like aspartame.
That's correct. A lot of people don't know that just by drinking a diet soda or a diet iced tea or something that has that's sweetened with NutraSweet, the main ingredient in NutraSweet is aspartame, and that causes cancer. It's
something that was rejected multiple times by the FDA.
Mm-hmm.
Ken, did you have
a... Oh, yeah, a lot of these treatments take advantage of certain characteristics of the cancer cell. You mentioned cesium, and as I understand it, that takes advantage of the acidity of cancer cells.
Not so much the acidity, but that is linked to it. What both cesium and protocell sort of take advantage of is the fact that cancer cells are primarily anaerobic in their cell respiration, and the cell respiration in biochemical terms means how they produce energy for themselves. And so basically all the healthy cells in our bodies use oxygen. They burn oxygen to metabolize energy from things like proteins, carbohydrates, sugars, and fats, and everything, and oxygen is critical in the metabolizing of energy from those substances. Cancer cells don't use oxygen at all. They've become so damaged, and they're sort of trying to survive by becoming anaerobic in most cases, meaning anaerobic means, of course, without oxygen. Now, the end result is that when you don't have oxygen in the environment, then the environment becomes very acidic, and the pH goes down. And the other thing about cancer cells is that in their anaerobic cell respiration, they produce lactic acid as a byproduct, and that makes their environment even more acidic. So actually, acidity and low oxygen are connected.
And cesium is alkaline. It's the opposite of an acid.
Yes, actually, cesium is one of the most alkalizing minerals. And the thing that's really neat about cesium is that it is readily taken up by cancer cells. You know, when people alkalize due to general nutrition or general diet,
right,
what they're doing is they're alkalizing the extracellular fluid in their bodies, and that's a good thing, and it does help prevent disease and keep them healthy. What cesium does, on the other hand, is that it's readily taken up by the cancer cells, directly into the cancer cells, and it alkalizes them to death from the inside out. And that's one thing that's very different about cesium.
And is it just ingested, or it's not like injected directly into the cancer?
No, it's not injected, and in fact, it's quite an easy approach to use, especially if you use the form of it that I talk about in my book, which is the liquid ionic form. And for instance, this woman with the metastasized ovarian cancer and the man with the late-stage stomach cancer, they both just took enough. I think it was something like, I can't say exactly, but I think it was something like between 3 and 5 tablespoons of each liquid. This you have to take both cesium and potassium. And the reason is that the cesium is the cancer-killing part of it. It'll actually directly kill the cancer cells. The potassium is what you need to do, because if you alkalize cells too much, you may develop a potassium deficiency. So you have to kind of correct that by ingesting potassium as well. So you need a little guidance on that. And it's not just the sort of thing you go to your local health food store and get potassium for or cesium for.
You're listening to In Context on WPKN 89.5 FM in Bridgeport. And we're speaking with Tanya Harder-Pierce about alternative non-toxic treatments for cancer. And if you'd like to call in and join the conversation, you dial up 203-336-9756, 203-336-9756. Tanya, I remember a few years back there was a lot of publicity about Laetril.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about how that acts as a cancer remedy and how effective it is?
Yes, Laetril has had a great efficacy for cancer. It was actually developed, I think it was started back in the 1950s or so, by two scientists, Ernst T. Krebs Sr. and then Ernst T. Krebs Jr., father and son medical research team. And what they did was they found that a common, you can call it a vitamin, it's actually called vitamin B17. It's a common natural compound that is in a lot of foods that we eat naturally. It's in a lot of, every time you eat a cashew or a macadamia nut or a lima bean, you're ingesting a certain amount of B17. Now what they did was it's in the family of natrilocytes in chemistry. But what they found was that if they synthesized this and kind of made a refined version of it and then injected it into people intravenously, that it has a natural cancer-killing effect. And there were a lot of doctors back in the 1970s in particular that had great success with this intravenous Laetril. And then for the intravenous part was usually just for maybe a first few weeks or few months, and then the patients could continue taking B17 tablets or Laetril tablets at home. And many, many people were cured by that. And there's a real interesting way that Laetril or B17 works against cancer that I describe in my chapter on Laetril. But yes, it has had great efficacy. There are a lot of doctors in other countries, for instance, in Mexico, that still use Laetril, and a few in the United States, but it's hard to find them because it's very difficult to get around the laws, and legally doctors aren't supposed to use that for cancer.
Ed Griffin mentions that mm-hmm. 26 studies worldwide showed that Laetril was effective with cancer, including one by Dr. Kanematsu Sugiuri of Sloan Kettering Cancer Hospital. So
yes,
with all this in favor of it, how did it get deep-sixed?
Well, Dr. Kanematsu at Sloan Kettering was the top medical researcher, a brilliant scientist.
Excuse me, Tanya. We have a caller?
Oh, okay, sure.
Go ahead, caller. Hello, are they there? Anybody there? Okay. As you were saying, Tanya.
Oh, sorry about that.
Sorry.
Dr. Kanematsu Sugiura proved that Laetril was a very effective treatment against cancer, and basically claimed that it was the best thing he'd ever seen. And he was the top researcher at Memorial Sloan Kettering, but the powers that be were already in place at that time. And again, I'm not sure exactly, but I think that was back in the 1970s. I do talk about that in my book, or maybe the 1980s. And so it got suppressed, and it got suppressed in a way that was completely fraudulent. The tests that they did using Laetril to prove its efficacy, they, from what I've heard, they did not do the test correctly. There were so many doctors out there using Laetril successfully with cancer patients, it was just a true fiasco that the medical industry wouldn't endorse it. But again, it was one of those approaches that was natural, and mm-hmm. Big Pharma could not patent it and make a lot of money on it,
right.
So it was actively suppressed. And people would be shocked if they knew just how many approaches, virtually all of the approaches in my book, almost all of the 21, have been suppressed in one way or another by our medical establishment.
I was actually going to ask you exactly that. Could you go just a little bit into how some of these really brilliant researchers have been persecuted by the modern medical establishment?
Yeah, that's a big story. I know that a lot of the early Laetril doctors were thrown in jail, had their medical licenses taken away. Some moved out of state. I know that one lived in California, and then he eventually moved to Nevada, which had a little bit more lenient medical board, and he did practice some in Nevada.
Uh-huh.
There have been others, many other cases. The American Medical Association, the AMA, also was very involved in suppressing some of these early treatments going back to the 1940s and 50s and 60s. And
that brings us to Dr. Stanislav Brzezinski. He's one of a poster boy for
uh-huh.
how our government treats people who try to cure cancer. Could you talk about his anti-neoplastins and how
yes.
that works? And What happened to him?
Dr. Stanislav Brzezinski is currently practicing. He has a clinic in Houston, Texas, and he has a very long history of treating cancer patients with much higher success than conventional medicine, using a non-toxic therapy that he devised. He is a very brilliant scientist from Poland, and medical researcher and physician, and he was able to develop something called antineoplastin therapy, and what it is certain types of chains of amino acids that he was able to isolate from the body that had particular anti-cancer properties and could sort of reprogram cancer cells to normalize or to fall apart. But basically, there were many, many patients who actually went to his clinic and were cured of some of the best responding to this type of therapy are the lymphomas, like non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and brain cancers, though other types of cancers respond as well. But I've talked to a lot of people who did well with the antineoplastin therapy. Unfortunately, he's had a huge legal battle with the FDA. The FDA has tried to shut him down many times, and I do actually go into the details.
Hang on a second, Tanya. We have another call.
Sure.
Caller, go ahead. You're on air.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead. Oh, please turn your radio down, though.
I'm going to turn my radio down.
Sure.
Maybe you can. I'm calling. Listen to the show. I love the show.
Thanks.
It's so informative.
Uh-huh.
And,
thank you.
My question is, cancer has been researched to the death for 50 years or more.
Uh-huh.
Money has been poured into that organization. And why haven't they really come up with something that tells us what it is and if it's something that's in our DNA from many years ago, for thousands of years?
Actually, that's something that Tanya goes into in her book, if it's something that's inherited or genetic.
So what do you think, Tanya?
It's. I don't think it's. I think very few, very small percentage of cancers are actually inherited.
Uh-huh.
Though the confusing issue is that cancer does involve genes, but it doesn't involve genes that are necessarily inherited. So, in other words, the way it involves genes is the genes are impacted by toxins or by deficiencies in the body, nutritional deficiencies or toxins that we're exposed to. And so what happens is those genes then can get damaged and cancer can result as a result of that. What I like to say to people when they... Your question is a good one, by the way. What I tend to answer that with is this. You're never going to find a solution if you're always looking in the wrong place. And that's exactly what conventional medicine has been doing for 60 to 70 years. They've been looking for cures in the realm of toxic patentable drugs that are not natural. And the only reason they've been doing that is that's where they're looking because that's where they'll make the most money.
Really, the only way that you can put money into research is if it's going to turn a profit. And a lot of these researchers over the years, people, they were put in jail or prosecuted, but it's because they were doing it for free on most cases. They weren't making any money.
That's right. Many of the researchers died penniless and,
exactly.
And
you mentioned that,
because they couldn't get their really good, effective treatments accepted. So the caller was making the point that, you know, cancer has been researched for many, many years. Why isn't it understood yet? And what I would say to that is that it's not understood by conventional medicine because they're looking in the wrong places. And they're not really trying to understand cancer. There's so much information out there that does show how to explain cancer, but it's all in the alternative realm. And so what we have is two different worlds of reality. People who live in the conventional realm of medicine have one idea about cancer, and people in the alternative realm have another idea. But what you'll find is the alternative realm is the realm that is really curing cancer, and that's the place where most people are getting well.
Okay.
Do we have another
question? Tanya, the other question is, is it something that can never be cured? Is it something that's been around on the planet a very long time? And it's something that cannot be cured. Is it something that kills us no matter what we do? You know, is it something, it's like going after the prey. Does it get rid of humans through the population control? Is it something that's in our DNA that does kill us regardless of how much money we put into this thing?
Right.
Do we die from it because of the planet taking care of its own?
I think the best answer to that is that cancer's been around for thousands of years, forever basically, and it's even in plants to some extent. Sometimes plants will get sort of plant tumors. But if you do go back just 100, 200, or 300 years, you find that the rate of cancer development is extremely low. And so what we have now today is very, very high rates of cancer. And it's very easy to understand why, because we know that many, many things in our modern lifestyle are carcinogenic and causing cancer. Fluoridated water causes cancer. The fluoride in your toothpaste can cause cancer.
Right.
It's
an industrial waste.
In your diet drink can cause cancer. The hormones that you take, if they're not bioidentical, can cause cancer. There's all kinds of things. So there's a lot of reason to believe that, you know, if we were to just stop all those things in our modern living and our environment, things that are being put in our water and our foods that are causing cancer, we would have much lower rates. In fact, even I quote one study in the book about Israel at one point banned some of the top carcinogenic pesticides that they were using on their crops. And within 10 years, the rates of breast cancer in women went down dramatically.
That's right, that's right.
So I don't believe that cancer is something that has to be killing people all the time. I think in a perfect world where we're living naturally and harmoniously with nature and in a healthy way, that cancer would be a very, very small percentage of contributors to death. And there's also so many natural things that we already know can fight cancer that we can eat or drink or take. Many of them are just natural foods or supplements that are very easy to help prevent cancer, too. So I actually think cancer is a thing of the past completely. We'd have to clean up our environment, our water, our air, and food. And, it's a big issue now because the true understanding of cancer has been suppressed.
Caller, we thank you very much for your call and your question. And the phone number again is 203-336-9756. And we have just a few more minutes, so if you want to get a call in, make it now, make it quick.
You were mentioning Dr. Brzezinski as a case of a researcher who got punished. I believe in your book you said he was facing 300 years in prison and he'd had his clinic raided a couple of times by the FDA.
We have one more call.
Sorry.
Go ahead, caller.
Hello, caller.
Hi, this is for Tanya Pierce. This question?
Yes, go ahead.
I've been doing research on alternative therapies for cancer treatment, and I stumbled across the yogi's practice of drinking the midstream morning urine to try to help and see if there's any antigen-antibody response. Do you know anything about this? Is this something that is possibly helpful?
No, I don't know much about it. In all of my searching, I've never really come across any good cases of people who were able to treat their cancer that way. I can't say that there aren't any. I do know, however, that when Dr. Brzezinski first started isolating and synthesizing the antineoplastins that he found in the body, he actually got them out of human urine. And so it is possible that some aspect of that treatment, may be true.
So there is a connection.
But you've got to remember, too, that yogis may also be able to overcome their own cancer in a lot of ways and may not be as toxic as a lot of the rest of us.
It's not, right, exactly. It's not just that, but somehow that the urine contains the antigens, which are tumor-specific to the individual, so that if the tumor is in the body, then it might be found in the urine, and then if it's re-ingested just a small amount, it would create the intestinal tract to create antibodies for I'm trying it now.
Thank you very much for your call, caller.
We're running out of time, so we just have to try to move quickly through these calls.
Thank you.
Hello, you're on the air?
No.
We have another call?
Is that on the wrong line? Caller, our phone system here is a bit interesting. Caller, go ahead.
Yes, hi. I wanted to know, can you try to have questions about, I'm sorry, I'm getting a little flustered.
That's okay.
That's okay.
Can we trust the doctors when they say you need a biopsy? They seem to be biopsy happy. And you wonder, Am I just being used to for them to make money, or do I really need this biopsy?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I mean, there's between 100,000 and 200,000 deaths a year occur just from medical errors, and another 1.5 million people are injured from medication errors. I mean, can we really trust the standardized medicine?
So what do you think, Tanya?
Oh, boy, that's a pretty loaded question, and there's a lot of arenas in the
I should point out that you're not treating patients. You're approaching this as a scientific journalist, right, Tanya?
That's correct, and it is important that I let your audience know that I'm not a physician, and I've this book basically as sort of an investigative reporter, so to speak, where I've looked into what other scientists and physicians and you know, medical researchers have discovered. And I also, in my research for the book, I communicated with over 100 cancer patients who had used alternative methods. So what I wanted to do was not present just theoretical cancer treatments, but ones that were practical, that had worked for people. And I present their stories and then also go into the science behind that treatment. In terms of biopsies and all of that, I think it's important for people to somehow, if they can, try to educate themselves a bit first. Because I do think biopsies can be problematic. There's certain situations where biopsies may be warranted. Other situations, maybe not so much. It depends on where you're at and what you're planning to do, but it is true that a lot of times, and there's a number of physicians who have stated this and seen it in their practice, that when a needle biopsy is taken from a tumor, a lot of times as that needle is pulled out, some cancer cells are released into the bloodstream and the lymph system and will actually metastasize as a result of that procedure.
Wow.
Some people have actually seen on their scan a line of cancer developing right from where the needle was pulled out.
Wow. Okay, caller, we thank you very
much
for your
caller.
Question.
do we have another call?
And caller, you're on the air.
Hello, caller.
Yes, please go ahead.
Am I on the air?
Yes, you are. Go ahead.
I appreciate the fact that you wrote the book. If anybody truly and honestly cares about the health in this country, there's a book out called The China Study, and they will tell you exactly why the information about cancer has been stepped on by the American Medical Association, the Dairy Association, the Meat Association, just about any association that backs animal-based protein. And it's a 40-year study. It's not like a doctor, an Atkins diet or a South Beach diet or any of those fads. This has been going on for 40 years. It's been tested on people.
Thank you. Do you have a question for Tanya Pierce?
Oh, no.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much for that contribution, though, caller.
Okay.
Well, yeah, and then the caller's right, though. I mean, the associations do stand to gain. They are funded heavily, and their main purpose is to keep themselves going. And we'd have another caller.
Hello, caller.
Please turn your radio down.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Hi, yes. I love your show.
Thank
Very
you.
Interesting.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I have a question on drinking water, and specifically on drinking like an ionized alkaline, like a 9.5 Kangen water.
Okay.
I wanted to know if there was any opinion on that.
Well, what do you think, Tanya?
You know, I've heard a lot of people have great claims about the Kangen water and some of the other types of water, and I think they are very helpful. I actually have not really looked into those that much because what we don't have is much information about their use for cancer, and what I tried to do in the past 10 years of my research was really focus on what has been proven to work for people with cancer.
Right.
So, you know, those ionized waters, alkaline waters, things like that, generally, from what I'm hearing, have very good overall health effects.
So it could be something to kind of help you stay healthy.
That's right. And there are a lot of cancer patients who use those waters to help them in their recovery. In terms of being a cancer treatment or make the cancer go away, I personally have not come across evidence for that. But if it's out there, I just haven't seen it.
Thank you very much, caller.
And do we have another one?
Do we have another call?
Chris? Oh, that's on the ghost line. caller, who is calling in right now, please just call back and you'll get rolled over to the proper line. We have sort of a system here where one line can't get on the air. where were we headed here?
Well, I'm glad we're able to take a few extra callers.
Yes, no, it's really good.
There's a lot of interest in this subject.
There's
a tremendous amount of frustration. One of the questions, concerns I have, and I found the descriptions of the alternative care's treatments very interesting, was what do I do if I have cancer? Since these treatments are suppressed, who do you go to learn more about them? They say to supervise your treatment.
Well, you know, this is one thing that I think is the biggest shame, is that the public has been deceived and basically been victimized with cancer by having these good treatments suppressed. And it is very hard for people to find the true information, the good information. That's what I tried to do in my book, and unfortunately what people have to do to get that information about alternative cancer treatments is they really do have to do their own searching by finding books like mine, and there are some other good books about
too.
Suzanne Summers' book, Knockout, is excellent.
Oh, good.
And what you'll find when you start looking into this treatment arena is that there are a number of treatments that are self-administered that you don't need a prescription for, that you can get, but you have to learn and read about how to do them.
That's right.
Some of the information's online. Yeah. But there are, like I said, some great books about the different approaches. If you search Amazon for alternative cancer, that'll get you a lot of the books right there.
Tanya, let me interrupt you because we have one more caller.
Hello?
Caller, go ahead with your question.
Hi. I just wanted to say I was diagnosed with a type of cutaneous T-cell lymphoma.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I can't quite hear you. Can you speak up?
I was diagnosed with a type of lymphoma. It's a cutaneous T-cell lymphoma. Can you hear me?
Yeah,
go ahead, caller.
And I was just wondering if Tanya had any recommended treatments for that.
So he said he was diagnosed with a type of lymphoma. Cutaneous T lymphoma, is that what you said?
Cutaneous T cell.
Cutaneous T cell lymphoma, and he's asking if there's any kind of treatments that you know work specifically for that. And I'd have to say this is going to be our last caller for the show.
Okay. Unfortunately, what I have to say is that because I'm not a physician, it's really not possible for me to recommend specifically treatments for specific cases, but I can give you some information for looking into it on your own. And what I have found that with the lymphomas, there are quite a few different alternative treatments that work very well for that, and you need to just sort of read the different books on alternative treatments that you can find, and you'll come across different cases. I do know that the Brzezinski Clinic in Houston has a very good track record with lymphomas of all types. However, they do have the FDA controlling clinical trials, and you have to qualify for their treatment, and that can be a little tricky, but you can get a consultation at the Brzezinski Clinic in Houston and see if you would qualify for their original anti-neoplastin therapy. I also know that there is one conventional drug that is it's not so much of a toxic drug like most chemos, and it's called Rituxan or Rituximab, that has had some success with patients that have non-Hodgkin's lymphoma of some type. But it only has about a 30%, only about 30% of the lymphoma patients respond to that. So that is one conventional
Were any of the examples, that you gave in your book for the Protocell or the
CSM,
did any of them have to do with lymphoma?
Yes. Well, I've got a case in my Protocell section that, do I have a case? Now I'm trying to think. I know I have a lymphoma of the stomach, I believe, in the Protocell section. A man did really well with Protocell. I know there's a lymphoma, I think there's a lymphoma case in my cesium chapter. Again, in my Brzezinski chapter, there's some lymphoma cases. What I wanted to say earlier is that some treatments are self-administered at home. Other alternative treatments, you do want to find, there are certain clinics and doctors that you can find that where the doctor is really an expert. Even in the U.S., and some of those are mentioned in my book, some are mentioned in Suzanne Summers' book, and for instance, there's two doctors in New York that do an enzyme metabolic therapy, and they've had some success with lymphomas. I believe there's a doctor in Reno that I've referred to in my book who uses PolyMVA. That's an alternative non-toxic treatment. And I think he's had success. Again, I can't remember every case.
You do have quite a few treatment centers listed in your book.
That's right.
Yes. We do recommend to the caller to pick up a copy of your book, Outsmart Your Cancer, And the author, again, is Tanya Harder Pierce. And we thank the caller for the call, and we wish him the best luck with finding the right treatment. And, Tanya, we thank you so much for spending the time with us tonight. It's obviously been very informative to the audience and to us as well.
And your website is outsmartyourcancer.com. Oh, great.
And this, people can get the book on Amazon as well.
And this program will be archived at our website, incontextreport.com.
That's right.
We can make comments and sign up for announcements and podcasts.
That's right.
So thanks so much for joining us.
Great. Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure talking with you all.
Same here. Good night.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
In Context is produced by MDR Productions and is broadcast on the first Wednesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. and the first Sunday of the month at 10 p.m. So Gus and I will be here this Sunday at 10 p.m. taking your calls again. Also, please join us on Wednesday, April the 6th at 6:30 p.m. when we'll talk about how parents and students are being crushed by rising college tuitions.
What a scam.
Special thanks to Chris Teske for, again, handling the engineering
thanks,
show while
Chris.
Here tonight. And stay tuned for Chris's program, which is coming up next on WPKN.
See ya.